Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My name's Catherine Carr, and this is Season 3 of Relatively, the podcast all about potentially the longest relationships of your life.
Am I coming in clear?
Beautiful. I'll be bringing siblings together to talk about the connections they have as adults, as well as what it was like growing up together.
Hello.
Hello, there you are.
Technology.
This week I'm talking to Helen Thorne and her big brother, John Thorne.
That was a moment that my therapist and I went, that's it.
But I'll also talk to them separately to get a more private take on the relationship.
She went through so much, you know, emotional stuff, but then has just emerged vital and determined and confident. It's been amazing.
And I remember crying about a week before we got married, thinking, I haven't had enough of my brother.
And in a new twist, I'll be delving a little further back with the help of our sponsors, Find My Past, the family history experts.
I don't know much about Benjamin Derbyshire at all. Do you, Helen?
No, I knew that he was quite successful, but that's it, you know. Oh, that's brilliant.
Brothers and sisters are never straightforward. Helen is one half of the comedy duo The Scummy Mummies, alongside her friend and fellow comedian Ellie Gibson. John is also a performer, making his living as a freelance musician. Helen and John are two of the five Thorne children. John is the firstborn and Helen is the second youngest. There's a whopping 14-year age gap between them, meaning they had very different experiences of childhood. We talk about all of that, about mental health, about taking happiness into your own hands, and about divorce. But first, Helen started by describing her earliest memory of her much bigger brother.
My first memory of my big brother, it was when he got his, what you would say, his A-levels over here. And he ran down the corridor saying, I got straight A's. And I remember thinking, oh my God, my big brother's so clever.
Yeah, well, that happened. I didn't have a lot of distractions. I didn't really have much of a social life. Okay. We can't drink here in Australia until you're 18. So it was like halfway through the first year of university that I could actually go and buy any beer or anything like that. So, you know, I'm pretty smart and I worked hard and got some good results.
What sort of little girl was she? Can you remember?
The actual strongest memory I have is of her incredible musical talent. When she was 2 or 3 years old, she could get on a piano and play anything that she heard pretty much off by heart, and we sort of bring her out at family occasions, and she didn't mind the attention then, and she still doesn't mind it now. And but I left home when I was 17, so I was living with her only for 4 years or so. So that's my strongest memory of her. But she was a beautiful blonde, very bright, young little princess.
I mean, you were a baby, and he was a teenager, so he was probably not interested in you particularly at all. But
no. When do you think he was? I think I was quite in an inconvenience for all of my older siblings. I think my sister, I came along when my sister was 11, and that's just when you need your mum, isn't it? And even though my sister, I would say, is like my best friend now, I reckon that was really hard on her because the boys were sort of independent. But I think for mum to sort of have a baby and then another baby when my sister was a teenager, I think that was really difficult for them, actually, to be honest.
Mm. And was there a longing in you, there often is in babies with a big age gap, to catch up, even though you never are going to catch up?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I do feel that my role in the family is, I'm not the peacemaker, but I just want to be everyone's friend. I don't have as many spats, I think, with siblings, or I just want to be loved. I think that's why, you know, I'm a people pleaser, and I think that's a bit like my mum. My mum's a bit of a diffuser in that. My dad's a bit hot-headed, and he has much more of a, in the words of my mother, explosive personality. And I think John and I are very calm people.
What would you say your role is in the family? Helen knows what hers is, she thinks, but what do you think yours is?
Well, she's probably told you that she thinks I'm probably the favourite one. And I probably have the ear of my parents. wouldn't say better, but, you know, they would listen to me probably. I'm probably the calmest of the five of us.
You're giving me those vibes.
So I'm giving you that vibe. Am I? Oh, good.
John is clearly Dad's favourite.
Okay. Back to those straight A's.
Oh, my God. He is very much the firstborn. And we do laugh about that. Like, John did a concert in my parents' local town recently. He's an amazing pianist. And Dad, I was on the phone to Dad the other day. He said, oh, I couldn't keep my eyes off you, brother. I couldn't keep my eyes off John. He was just amazing. Like, his dad is, like, completely besotted in John. And that hasn't changed for however many years. What, 55 years?
I kind of love that. Years.
So, yeah. My sister and I have often giggled about my dad calling John the boy. Oh, my boy.
How do the other boys feel about him being the boy? That's what I want to know.
I know, right? I know. And they might listen to this podcast. They will listen to this podcast.
What could you do to wind him up in a heartbeat now? And has it changed from presumably when you were four and he was 18 or whatever? I'm hoping.
What can I do to wind John up? One of the things that makes me laugh about my brother is he's very careful with money. So I could talk about that. This is the thing that makes me laugh, is that John always buys the cheapest glasses possible. And often they've only got one arm. And when we were on tour recently, we were at a pub for lunch and he was wearing his one arm plastic glasses. And I said, try my glasses, John, which I'd gone to an optician and, you know, done it properly. I put it on and went, oh, I can see. And I thought, I don't want to hear that if you're fucking driving me around the country in a van. I want to know that you can see with your glasses on, John. So, yeah. But there's, you know, it's an endearing thing when you can wind each other up as well.
I'm not normally a winder-upper of people, I've got to say. That's not one of my aims in life. I mean, you have to be able to take, you know, as much criticism and sort of, you know, that kind of, you know, feedback as possible, I suppose, you know, when you're on stage. So it's pretty hard to wind her up, yeah. It's pretty hard to wind me up too.
Well, she said she could wind you up by teasing you for being a bit tight, maybe, or a bit careful with money.
Oh, that's very common knowledge, yes.
With your crap glasses and things.
And my crap glasses, yes. I think I have inherited my grandmother's frugal 1930s mentality, I have to say, which was passed down very, very carefully to my father. He's far worse than me when it comes to counting the pennies and the pounds.
It's not a bad thing.
My dad was a vicar for the first 10 years of my life. He was a vicar for the first 30 years of his career. Lots of joy in the house. But also my dad's quite a stressful person. And my mother, very calm. So there was always that dynamic.
Being a vicar's kid is a hard gig, I think.
Yeah, it's not easy. And also there's the expectations on how you behave and what you're like.
You obviously feel, you know, that you're watched more than other people in the community. And there's sort of certain expectations about, you know, your behaviour and your... and it's something you've got to sort of deal with.
You're meant to show up for church every week and sit in the front row. But what I really appreciate about my parents is when we got to about 13, they said, well, you make the choice whether you come to church or not. And none of us did. And, you know, but it's interesting growing up with that much religion around you. And I still really value the sense of community that, you know, a country church had. I love that people came together and sang and appreciating music. I think that's a real fundamental core of our family, is our love of music and our love of community. And my dad was very much available. You know, his job was next door. We didn't have much money, but I don't think that really mattered. We were always going to, like, caravans, or, you know, a friend lent us a beach house. And they're some of the best memories I have. And I think that's a lovely thing to be instilled as a child, all those sort of elements.
It sounds lovely. Do you think that you ended up being a people pleaser because you were kind of aware you were a little bit annoying to the older kids, and so in order to ingratiate yourself, you became Sunny Helen?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think coming from a big family, sometimes your roles get quite defined. because, you know, you're trying to fit in and trying to find out who you are within that big group of people. Mm. And we're all pretty loud and we're all pretty confident. We were living in the outskirts of Melbourne in Australia. And then when I was four, my parents moved us up to the countryside. Mm. And yeah, my sister went to boarding school, and then my older brother, Hugh, he also went to boarding school. So all of a sudden I went from a family of five to a family of two. But then the big kids would occasionally come home, and I just remember following them around the house. You know, I just wanted to be next to them the whole time. I loved them. They were so exciting. And then when I went down to the big city, if I stayed with my sister as a teenager, she'd take me to the pub. I remember her like gelling my hair and putting me in a denim jacket, putting the collar up. And she's like, you know, just be cool. And I kind of felt cool because I had older brothers and sisters as well.
But, that's good capital in the playground, that, if you've got an insight into the teen and 20-year-old world, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, my sister would give me clothes and I just felt like, whoa. Oh, I just thought I was it in a bit. But yeah, I think there was that pull between idolising them and then just wanting them to be my knockabout brother and sister. You know, there is that thing when there's a big gap at the beginning. And everyone says this, I'm sure it gets smaller and smaller the older you get. So, and now John works for me. So
the tables have turned.
He'll be thrilled. He'll be thrilled. But, you know, there is still an element which I, of course, I completely doe-eyed for my brothers and sisters. I don't think those sort of building blocks of siblings change dramatically. You're always going to be the little sister.
Mm. One of the things on this podcast I've sort of learned is everything is with you as central character. I'm the protagonist in my own story. And then when we get older with our siblings, you meet other protagonists who were in the same story with you, and they tell you things from the other point of view, and it blows your mind.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's interesting. And John got married when I was 13 and he was 27. And I remember crying about a week before he got married, thinking, I haven't had enough of my brother. And oh, God, I'm even feeling a bit sad about it now. I thought, oh, no, but he's going to be married and now he's a grown-up. It felt like, oh, that, you know, that opportunity for sibling time had ended, which is obviously bullshit. But I think, you know, when you're little, you don't really know what getting married means. But obviously now we're like buddies.
We hang out all the time and we have big long road trips where I drive her van to her gigs. It's been fantastic, actually, because her experience of growing up, you know, with mum and dad is very, very different to mine. And so I'm learning a lot more about, you know, how hard she had it compared to me.
We've spent many hours now driving in the van and hanging out at shows and going for curries afterwards. And we've also chatted about our family and how we feel about things. So it's been really a lovely opportunity. And he gets paid.
Gets paid to be with his sister.
Yeah.
I'm curious about your vibe on the tour bus, and I'm imagining playlists and games to keep you busy when you're bored.
There's
driving
no
up
music,
and down the motorway.
Because it's all talk.
So much talking.
I've never put the radio on once, I don't think.
Often we're rehearsing or just doing work.
Yeah, they've got their laptops out and they're sort of consulting their diaries, or Ellie's checking out the guide for the best three-star gourmet pub within 2 hours of the accommodation. And,
So what did you mean when you said you've been talking now as grown-ups and she's been telling you about how hard she had it after you left home?
Well, we have completely different experiences because after I went to university, our father very unwisely decided that he wanted to take the family to one of the worst parts of Australia he could find, and so relocated the family there. And that's, you know, poor old Helen then had a series of very, very bad experiences at some poor schools and, I don't know what the right adjective is, but, you know, not the best part of the world to grow up in, as opposed to what I had, you know, which was, 6 years at a boys' grammar school in Melbourne.
When I was talking to John, he did say that as adults you've talked about your two respective childhoods, and you said, Helen, they were quite different, and you were too polite or too loyal to say what he said, which was when your parents moved away to the middle of nowhere, it was actually really tough for you. Some tough schools and some tough times.
Yeah, I had a very difficult childhood in that respect. I was very bullied and I felt very lonely, but I kind of stuck to who I was. Like, I was always very musical and out there, and I used to write plays for my classes. So all that creativity was still very much part of me, or is part of me. When I was 10, Dad became a teacher. He left the church and he was a teacher at the local high school, and that was the high school I went to. So that was another sort of pressure, again, to be the good girl. And if I misbehaved in class, then the teacher could just tell my dad in the staff room, you know.
Yeah, that's awful. Yeah,
I know. It was really crap. Yeah, so when I was 10, I made the decision, unbeknownst to my parents, to change schools. So I rang up another school, a Catholic school about half an hour away, and said, I'm really sad, I need to change schools. And I did that myself. I had to take happiness into my own hands. And I think that was one of the biggest, almost sort of important moments in my life, I think.
Wow. And without being too sort of simplistic about it, it's something that you've carried on doing and you've done recently. You just decided enough's enough.
Yeah, and I do make reference to that in the book, because I'm doing sort of like deep psychotherapy, was going back to all these moments in my life where I chose happiness. And I think that was a moment that my therapist and I went, that's it. And when I was writing the book and you know, Jane, John's lovely wife, and I were going, yeah, there is something in me that channels that 15-year-old girl that says, enough is enough. I've got to make this change. That's something I'm quite proud about myself, is that I don't seek or don't blame others for my unhappiness. You know, I want to take responsibility for how my life is going to go.
This season of Relatively is sponsored by Find My Past, the online home of the 1921 census. 1921 was a time of real change for women in Britain. The First World War created new job opportunities, and for the first time, they could vote. Hidden in the 1921 census, there are thousands of stories of pioneering women like Dorothy Levitt, the first female racing driver, or Adela Breton, the early female archaeologist. What boundaries was your grandmother breaking? Find out at findmypast.co.uk, exclusive home of the 1921 census online.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You've just written a book, Get Divorced, Be Happy. Obviously, yeah. That you've ended up happy at the other end of it, but the process is not all roses.
Yeah.
What role did John play in kind of supporting you through that time and then with the book coming out and things?
It was lovely. Like, when I found out... Oh, God, I'm going to cry. Oh, sorry. When I found out about my husband's affair, the first thing I did, well, it was at night... And the next day I went straight to his house and, he was there with my sister-in-law, and I can't tell you how important that was, because, you know, my family, most of it are in Australia, and to have a sibling there when your whole world has fallen apart, it was really amazing. And when my sister, marriage collapsed, she called me straight away, and I was in a taxi and with her within a half an hour. And, you know, I think I'm very lucky. Sorry, Catherine, I didn't realise I was going to cry. That's not what you want from a comedian. Jesus.
She was very upset, as you can imagine. I'd been through a similar situation with my first marriage, so I could relate and, try and comfort. I'm so proud of the way she, her life has completely changed. And She went through so much emotional stuff, but then has just emerged vital and determined and confident. It's been amazing.
Yeah, gosh, you know, it was only 2 years ago. So I think that was really important. And that was, so it was the first 3 weeks when I was a mess, you know, he came over and all those sort of things and was so comforting. He was very wise. And so, yeah, I felt very lucky. four out of the five of us have got divorced, Catherine. She was the last man standing. But never say never.
Do you see that change in her then, definitely?
Yeah, yeah, because she was trying desperately to make the marriage work and to, you know, make everyone happy, and as that's her thing. And so that was such a weight on her shoulders for a while. And then to not have to worry about that anymore, or that side of her life anymore, allowed her to gather strength and change some other parts, you know, like she ran the marathon last year, for Christ's sake. So,
I know, amazing.
Yeah.
John and Ellie played a song at my book launch, which was all about how much he loved me. And John played the piano when Ellie sang. And I was like, oh, my God, there's my brother and my best friend. Love has been redefined for me. Love has got better because of finding out someone didn't love me, if that makes any sense at all.
I think if you realise you've been settling for a very thin sort of love, that's a yes. hard thing. But then realising that that means there's a proper love out there somewhere is another great thing.
Yeah, yeah. And someone described the other day about shallow and deep love. And, you know, I look back on my marriage and thought, no, that was very shallow. There was no depth to it, unlike the other love that I am surrounded by now.
Yeah, but man, I've had my ups and downs, gosh. So I had a little 3 month stint in a mental home. So, you know, we've all had our ups and downs in the family.
When was that, John?
That was 1991, when the Gulf War broke out. Yeah, I just finished one of my university courses and had gone very hard that year, and it was payback time, I guess.
He had two spells in two sort of months. I think one was 3 months and one was 5 months in a psychiatric hospital. And as a young girl, to go and see your brother when he's not very, very well was very, very hard. And I remember being very sad about that. And, you know, I remember him talking to me. He said, oh, I've got a yellow lighter and yellow symbolises this. And he would all look in the sky and there was a sky writer and he's like, 7's the perfect number. And he was talking in all these sort of strange ways and he didn't look like himself.
She asked me, tell me about her experiences of coming visiting me in hospital. But, you know, but she'd be 11, I suppose, or, you know. Yeah, it's pretty hard for that age to sort of, you know, have much use. That sort of leads up to the, you know, getting married and Helen's feelings of
abandonment.
Abandonment, yes.
Mental health is spoken about so widely now, but back then, you know, I think it was a big shock for us all. And Mum had a brother who's now passed away, who had schizophrenia and had mental health issues. So I think that was quite confronting for her to see her son unwell. We talked about it recently, again, because it's been so lovely being on tour with John, about what that was like and what it was like for him. And it's really lovely to be able to talk about really comfortably, like it's not sort of swept under the carpet.
So on this podcast, one of the things I'm really interested in is how siblings fit into kind of the short family history of their own nuclear family, but also interested in how they fit into the longer story of like their relatives from the past and stuff. And this season of the podcast is sponsored by Find My Past, who published the 1921 census. So I have in my hands, from the researchers at Find My Past, the line for the ancestors of Helen Thorne and John Thorne.
So exciting. I'm like beyond excited. Ooh, and so are the rest of the family.
Excited. Yes.
I'm going to read it to you like a little story, if that's all right. Not like a long thing.
Oh, yes, but please. Yeah.
So they pick out two people. You. There's Benjamin Derbyshire, your great-grandfather, and there's Caroline Pearl Rainforth, your maternal grandmother.
I don't know much about Benjamin Derbyshire at all. Do you, Helen?
No, I knew that he was quite successful, but that's it, you know. Oh, that's brilliant.
So Benjamin Derbyshire, he's a well-known and highly successful solicitor in Western Australia, and he practiced law continuously in Perth from 1895 through to his death in 1945. And what's so neat about these records is that you can see all the times that he took ships from Liverpool over to Australia and who he travelled with and what possessions he took with him as well. So I'll send you those so you can dig into that. Your grandmother, Caroline Pearl Rainforth, in 1921, when the census was published, she lived in Little Venice in London. Did you know that?
No.
So she came, she came from a family of tailors. And in the records, it said these buildings were six stories high and supposed to be decent, but small houses for the working class. The roofs were flat and were used to lay out clothing to dry. And they shared a toilet between two or three flats.
Oh, gross.
So gross.
Bad enough with three people in my house, two children. Disgusting. But anyway.
So you can kind of look and see that what's now an oligarch's flat once had your ancestors' laundry drying flat on the roof.
Wow. Shall I knock on the door?
Yes, we should go around together, so.
A cup of tea, please. Often we'd go to our grannies in Melbourne, and she was quite an impressive woman. She's one of the first doctors in Australia, women doctors.
No.
Yeah, so she was quite, she had a presence to her. She was very warm, but very, what's the word? She just knew, she knew her worth.
After my first year at university, I didn't go back to stay with my mum and dad. I actually just stayed with granny, so it was just me and granny by ourselves. That was very influential on me. My frugality comes from there, and the way I wash up and the way I prepare meals and that kind of stuff. And it was a really special time in my life to be living with her. You know, it's nearly 30 years since she died. I mean, she's still a huge influence.
I have dreams about her. Like, she died when I was 15, so obviously I have less time and didn't have the opportunities that John had to have with her. But I have conversations with her in my dreams and going, you know, there's been times where I've gone, Granny, I'm doing this now.
Yeah.
I want to do well to impress her. You know, I think there's something like a parent. I'm like, I'm doing this now, Granny. You know, look what I've done. Yeah. Look. And I once remember sitting at a dinner table and I was, you know, in my teens and I had a bit of a huff and I was like, oh, I hate being a girl. I want to play football. And, you know, and she said, you, my dear, can go and eat your dinner in the car. And I thought, oops. She was so cross. And I thought, yeah, how insulting for this little upstart teenage girl going, I don't want to be a girl, when Granny has been like this amazing kind of pioneer of female doctors. And then, oh, here's this little shit being a pain. I thought, no, that was very polite. Go and eat your dinner in the car.
You know, your brand as the Scummy Mummies is obviously slightly opposite to being the vicar's daughter and, you know, sitting properly at the table with the First Lady Doctor of Australia in some ways. Do you think there's ever has been an element of John not understanding what it is that you do or the way that you live or the sort of brand or the attitude of life that you've chosen to inhabit joyfully and fully?
No, I think that's one of the things I really appreciate in John, and the thing that we've really bonded over is that he's been a performer for, you know, nearly 40 years now, and he gets the joy of what I do. We actually worked on a TV show together. Oh, when was it? 16 years ago, 17 years ago. And he did some of the music for it, and I was on the panel. It was an arts and culture programme on the ABC. And that was the first time we worked together, and I thought, oh, this is it. What a joy it is to work with your brother. And I fully think he gets what I do.
What do you feel like when you see her up on stage making a whole room of people crease up?
Oh, super proud. Yeah. And she just gets better and better. You know, she's dynamite. And I'm also very proud of how much work she's done and how it's paid off. And it's just a great inspiration.
When you know that your sibling is proud of you, that's a lovely feeling. And I don't take that for granted because, and I won't say which sibling it was. I remember one of them said, I can do what you do. I was like, could you? Go on then.
I'd like to see you try.
I'm funnier than you. I was like, are you now? Prove it. So I think that's something I really appreciate about my brother and that, yeah, he gets the absolute joy and I would say addiction to what it's like to be on stage. Like it's a heady thing. It's a delicious thing to have a whole crowd of people laugh at a joke that you've written all by yourself. Look, Mum, look. That's lovely.
Yeah. And the very last question, you said it was a musical family, although perhaps not the kind of rock and roll that you got into, John, when you went to university. But what song, maybe it's a hymn, I don't know, but what song would transport the two of you back maybe to the first house in Melbourne or somewhere else where you grew up? What bit of music do you think?
I think it might have to be a hymn. What's one of your...
ABBA was pretty strong in the house.
Oh my God, ABBA, yeah. That And we do ABBA in the Scummy Mummy show. We do an ABBA parody now. Yeah, ABBA's a really good one. I remember seeing Mum dancing to ABBA in the kitchen quite gleefully. And that's a lovely memory. And then Dad being in barbershop quartets for church things. God.
The other story about Mum and Dad is that if I was writing a new song when I was 15 or 16 and I had two options, I would play them both to Mum, and whichever one she chose, I would choose the other one.
Your poor Mum.
Oh,
no.
Oh my God.
It worked, it worked.
Thank you to Helen and to John, and thank you too for listening.
That's awesome. Oh, thank you, Catherine. This has been such a joy. Oh,
thank you.
I'd like to say thank you to our sponsors, Find My Past, for digging into their extraordinary records and uncovering the surprising gems in the Thorne family history that you heard today. Find My Past is the only place online where you can access the 1921 census. So if you want to start your family tree or add colour to what you already know, then findmypast.co.uk is the place to do it. Thank you to Tanita Tikaram for letting us use her amazing song. This is a Pocket production. And sound design is by Nick Carter at mixsonics.com. Next week, I'm talking to the brothers Nicholas and Christopher Frayling. We talk about being late developers, having a rally-driving mother, and the cruelty of 1950s boarding school.
There's a good tradition of love and hate. Staying by the fireside, there's a good tradition of love and hate. Staying by the fireside, now the rain may fall. Your father's calling you, you still feel safe inside. Although your ma's too proud, your brother's ignoring you, you still feel safe inside. Oh, was it solo? Was it yesterday? Was it true for you? 'Cause while all the rest had taken time, this didn't do it.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.